Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In this presentation, I'll talk before you about Surah Al-An'am, which happens to be the sixth surah in the present arrangement of the Quran. And from the point of view of categorization of the various surahs into different groups, this surah happens to be the beginning surah of the second group. The second group of the Quran is comprised of four surahs. Surah An'am is the first of them. It is followed by Surah Al-A'raf, which is the seventh surah of the Quran, followed by two surahs, which are Madanan surahs, Surah Anfal and Surah Tawbah. Together, these four surahs, two of them Meccan and two of them Madanan, they comprise of a complete group. As you would recall, I mentioned that the Quran is comprised of seven distinct independent groups, each one of them beginning with one Meccan surah or more and ending with one or more Madanan surahs. The idea is that each of these seven groups are a complete entity containing an idea which is independent to its own group, and each surah is serving in one way or the other the central theme and the basic purpose of the group in its own peculiar way. The second group has Surah An'am, about which I'm going to talk now, as its first surah, which invites the people of Quraysh in particular to have faith in the Quran, in the Messenger of God, and God Almighty's message of believing and leading this life in accordance with the life hereafter, the understanding of life hereafter. It is followed by Surah Al-A'raf, which in particular describes the destruction, the doom that was met by the earlier nations who were visited by their respective rusul, messengers, who delivered the messages to them most clearly. And at the culmination and the climax of those messages, when the nations bent upon denying those messages, they got destroyed, and they received, therefore, the displeasure of the Almighty right in this world, which is to serve as a prelude to the punishment that they will receive in the hereafter. Surah Anfal, which is the Madanan surah, talks about the possibilities of the believers who accompanied Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, the last of all messengers. It talks about the possibility of improving them spiritually and morally, so that they become befitting companions of the messenger, so that the Almighty should use them as tools of his decision, that the disbelievers, the deniers of the message of the messenger, Muhammad, Allah's mercy be on him, should receive punishment through them. God Almighty, it seems, in Surah An'am, did not want that this punishment should be inflicted on the enemies of God, except through the hands of those people who were really worthy and befitting of this extremely important task. And Surah Tawbah is the description of the ultimate punishment that reached all those enemies of God who received the message of Islam in its pristine form through the messenger Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him. And they were later on given their respective punishments through the companions and the accompanying circumstances that led them all to receive what they deserved. In Surah An'am, you find that the pure invitation to faith is presented to the people who were the immediate addressees of Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him, the people of Quraysh, the polytheists of Mecca, and those living in its surroundings. This surah, it talks about a number of subjects, and I'll mention only a few of them, a few prominent amongst them, one by one. One of the things that you notice in this surah is that the arguments that have been presented to the people of Quraysh are all based on human nature, or the nature of the phenomena that happens to surround us in this world. And the reason is that because these people were unaware of what was contained in the Torah or Injil, they were, of course, not going to be influenced and impressed by the references to those earlier books. So that they were targeted in the invitation that they were extended in the form of arguments that were based either on human nature inside the soul of us all, or the nature that surrounds us all in this material world. And indeed, what has been described in this category of mentions for the invitation is a beautiful description of the nature that the Almighty has created. Indeed, when one reads the verses of this particular surah, one is inclined to be overwhelmed by the understanding that this description couldn't have been made by anyone except the one, the being who created this nature, created these surroundings. It is described in such strong, confident, and beautiful manner that an open-minded reader will have no response possible for him to offer other than being overwhelmed by it. This particular surah also talks about, within the description of the invitation extended to the people of Quraysh, the reference, although a passing reference, to the historical events that took place in the past, about which the people of Quraysh, the people of Mecca, were quite aware through the legends that they received from their elders. The surah also answers a number of questions that were raised by the disbelievers to present excuses for them not believing in the message. For example, they created this controversy as to how could a human be a messenger of God when he eats and drinks like all humans do, when he goes about the marketplace to undertake his own chores of life like all other people do. The Quran responds by saying that had there been angels inhabiting this world, there would have been an angel sent to guide them. But because humans have to be guided, therefore the Almighty arranged for a human being to guide mankind. And therefore, this particular excuse or criticism doesn't turn out to be valid. Another important aspect of the surah is the presentation of the manner in which Ibrahim alayhi salam presented his message to the nation that received God's message through him. Ibrahim alayhi salam has been prominently mentioned in the surah, particularly because of the fact, as I said, this surah is addressing the people of Quraysh and the people of Mecca, and they all believed and accepted Ibrahim alayhi salam as their ultimate spiritual leader, the one from whom they claimed the religious message that they were following emerged. And therefore it was important that they be guided through the example of Ibrahim alayhi salam, that Ibrahim never followed polytheism as his way. He abhorred it, and he invited his nation to believe in the unity of God, and this is what he did all along his prophetic mission. So that in the story of Ibrahim alayhi salam, what we find is a very effective way of him trying to convince his fellow nationals, people belonging to his tribe, that the polytheism that they are following has got no basis whatsoever. So what we find, for example, is that the Quran tells us that on one occasion, in order to help his companions, people around him, to realize and understand how absurd polytheism is, he mentioned before them during one of those nights when the stars looked prominent and pointed at one of them, the bigger of them, that it seems to be very bright, and this can be my Lord, my God, to whom I should pray. But then when the star disappeared, he exclaimed that it is not possible for me to pray to and to believe as God somebody who disappears. Likewise, he mentioned just about the same thing about the moon when it was in its full bloom. But when it disappeared, he again exclaimed that I cannot bow down and pray to anyone who is not permanently placed and disappears every now and then. And it was a similar thing that he mentioned about the sun. The idea was not that Ibrahim alayhi salam was going through an evolutionary process of understanding God through his own arguments, through his own reflection. The thing is that the Quran mentions that he helped the people of his nation, of his tribe, to realize how absurd the act of praying to and believing in the non-God deities is. It was a beautiful way of enabling the other people to understand the right point of view through first imagining as if what they are saying was correct, and then making them realize that even if their assumptions were accepted, it didn't make any sense whatsoever at all. The Quran in this surah also mentions the innovations, religious innovations, concocted by the people of Mecca in the name of God's religion. For instance, it talks about the fact that the people of Mecca, they used to say that the crops that they are raising, some part of the crops are exclusively reserved for pleasing God Almighty, in that some part of it is going to be spent in his way. And there was another part of the crops that were meant for the other non-God deities. And the Quran goes on to exclaim, to clarify, that if there was something wrong that happened to the crops that were meant for those who were other than God as their deities, then the portion that was earmarked for God Almighty's sacrifice for his purpose, that would be utilized to make good for the loss that was faced by the other crop. But if there's anything that goes wrong with the crops that were meant for exclusively God Almighty, they would not receive any help from the crops that were meant for the non-God deities. Such was the nonsensical absurdity of the manner there were such rituals and practices created in the name of God. They were bid'ah, they were religious innovations, and they have been strongly condemned in the Quran, not only about the crops, but also about the animals. What kind of animals are prohibited and what are not? There was a considerably detailed understanding of the law that was given by the religious notables of Mecca to their people, as if what they were giving to them was received from God. The Almighty clarifies beyond doubt, none of such things have actually been revealed by God Almighty. It seems that it's a problem with some religious people, that they seem more interested in what they create on their own in the name of religion. Or even if it's something created by their elders, they seem to be more inclined in defending such new innovations to be practiced more vehemently and strongly than the normal, natural, convincing religion of God. This is something which has been pointed out in this surah to clarify that the people of Mecca were not following the right religion. Then this surah is quite prominently presenting the understanding that those people who were denying the Prophet and were against him, they were treated by the Prophet most kindly. He was extremely magnanimous and concerned about them, and he wanted all of them to believe, so much so that he was inclined to ask God Almighty to respond to their demand for extraordinary events to happen, for signs to be given to them, for miracles to be revealed. The Almighty, on the other hand, had decided that he is not going to reveal any miracle in response to the demands of the disbelievers. And therefore, The prophet is told that he should not pay heed to what the disbelievers are asking for, because their demand is not based on any genuine reasons of investigation or expectation for accepting the message of God. These are just excuses to deny the message of God, and therefore the prophet should not really pay heed to what they're saying. On the other hand, the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, has been required by the Almighty to focus all his attention in making sure that the companions that have believed in him, have accepted the faith that he has brought forth, they receive his utmost attention. They should be the focus of all reformative training process for the sake of their upliftment of their morals and their spirituality. That's what the Prophet should do. Even if those people who are weak from a material worldly point of view, are poor, are subordinates of the leaders of Quraysh, they still deserve the Prophet's attention more than those people who have decided not to believe. Because God Almighty values a lot the belief of someone who has come forth on his own to make sure that he accepts and acknowledges the message of God, and he makes an attempt to improve himself spiritually and morally. The Quran also, while describing the various events that were taking place in Mecca at the time when the Prophet, may Allah's mercy be on him, was delivering the message, guides the believers to remain within their limits and to not lose their emotions and temper. The Quran requires, for instance, that the believers should not use abusive language for the false gods that the people of Mecca and its surroundings had created. In verse 108 of this surah, the Almighty says that if you are going to use abusive language for their non-god deities, they in retribution in turn are going to use the same language for your God. And God Almighty has created this worldly life as a trial in which when a certain nation starts referring to a certain concept or ideology as its religion, it starts loving it, admiring it, and they become more emotionally inclined towards it. Therefore, it's a trial. When you are dealing with people having other faiths, one has to be absolutely tolerant and unemotional, and should not criticize anyone else's religion or religious personalities who are revered in a manner which is indecent, because this world of ours is a trial, and in this trial people love what they think is correct, and it is only the Almighty who has the right to decide as to who was on the right and who was not. In this surah we also find that an important principle of guidance and the law of it has been mentioned, a law which has been described over and over again all throughout the Quranic surahs. An extremely important law to be understood, because it is only guidance which at the end of the day which matters. You see, in this worldly life we are going through a trial, and this trial is successfully faced by the people who are rightly guided. Of course, the all-important question is, who are the people who get guided? And why do they get guided? And why is it that there are others who do not get guided? What is their fault? The Quran clarifies over and over again that the Almighty guides only those people who are worthy of being guided, who value guidance, who are interested in guidance, so that the Almighty looks at the attitude of different people, and those people who are inclined towards understanding message of God and the guidance coming from it, from him, they are the ones who are considered fully capable and worthy of being given proper guidance. And therefore the Almighty says that he, when he decides to give guidance to someone, he opens the heart of such individuals for the message of God, and they feel satisfied and content with what it delivers. On the other hand, for those people who are to be misguided by the Almighty, in other words, about whom the Almighty has decided that they are not going to be guided simply because they didn't deserve guidance, because they behaved in a manner that showed that they are not valuing guidance properly, the Almighty has decided that such people, when they are going to receive guidance, they would feel as if they are ascending towards the sky and they are losing their breath and they are not feeling comfortable with it. The Quran also clarifies that the Sharia that the people of Mecca were presenting was innovations concocted by these people in the name of God and His message. And it also clarifies that the true Sharia, the true law, the true guidance that the Almighty has delivered is what God's messages have always been mentioning from time to time. And this is a guidance which, if summed up, it really mentions that nobody is going to worship anyone except God. He is the only God, the only deity, the only being that is capable of listening to the prayers of all humans and responding to them positively. The Quran also clarifies that apart from this expectation from human beings, the Almighty also desires from them that they should be kind to their parents all along. Parents who have been the source of enabling us to come to this world and who looked after us when we were young and completely incapable of taking care of ourselves. Likewise, he has mentioned that he requires in this worldly life that people who believe in him, they are always truthful, they are always honest, and when they make mention a statement, it is always the true statement, which really has got no hints of anything false and untrue. Likewise, he mentions that what has been prohibited by the Almighty in all his messages is the fact that obscenity, any hint of fornication, is stayed away from, whether the obscenity is apparent or whether it is hidden. It is all unacceptable. And he talks about the fact that these are the important principles which the Almighty wants every human being to follow. As far as those religious innovations are concerned that have been presented in the name of God's religion, they're completely false, they're concocted, and they need to be rejected. Indeed, in a religious society where religion is not based on sound arguments, it is not the religion that has been given by God, people very emotionally attach themselves to the teachings of that religion, even though they know that they've got no arguments to present to defend their cause. The Quran all along says that the religion of God has come in its final pristine form in the message of the Quran and the message brought by Prophet Muhammad, may Allah's mercy be on him. Everyone who wants to believe in God truly and to follow his message should accept this message and try as best as he can to follow it properly. May Allah Almighty enable us to understand his book as best as we can, and may he enable us to follow it to the best of our abilities.